There we go.
Okay. Welcome back, everyone. We are back on the record on the El Dorado preliminary plat proposal. At this point in the proceeding, we were turning back to the applicant to address any of the issues which came up during public comment, and then we'll turn to the planning department for any additional information or clarification.
In this hearing, examiner, can you hear me okay?
I can, if you could just state your name again for the record.
Yes, Levi Holmes.
Thank you.
So just want to start by acknowledging, I understand that with development comes challenges and it kind of new things that didn't exist there before. And some of these concerns that the neighborhood has raised, unfortunately, are just some of the growing pains that go along with more people wanting to live in this desirable area. And the nice thing about it, though, is, you know, every, I believe it's 8 years, Kitsap County updates their comprehensive planning, and they're planning for these well in advance before any permits come in. And one just example to that, you know, there's been this number thrown around about 9,000 trips for the traffic, and the 9,000 that people may see in some of the traffic studies is actually the capacity for one of the lengths of El Dorado Boulevard. With our project, all of the pipeline projects, the existing traffic already using it, and a growth factor on top of all of that combined, we're still well under that 9,000 limit for the capacity. And the county has designed that road and even built some of it and classified it accounting for all of that capacity. So we're well under that, you know, close to, with our project, we're looking probably about 60%, 60 to 65% of the capacity would be used total. And again, that's including all pipeline projects, anything that's had a permit submitted or approved that hasn't been built yet, and all the existing homes and traffic, and a growth rate of 1.5% on top of all of that. So just wanted to kind of mention that. A few other things, and none of these, you know, comments are new or something that are unforeseen that you will see in our studies and our reports. They're all already addressed, but I just wanted to speak to a few of them. There's the sidewalks that are going to go along El Dorado Boulevard. They go along the frontage of our property. You will notice, though, that along, I believe it's Whisper Ridge, which is immediately to the northwest of the property, because there's a significant portion of our property that runs adjacent to that or parallel, on the opposite side of the street, there will be sidewalks available for all of those neighbors. And ultimately, it ties into the county's planning process where they, as properties develop, they build their frontage improvements, and eventually there will be sidewalks that, you know, go everywhere throughout the county, is what kind of the intent is there. Additionally, the trail system that we've put in is in accordance with a non-motorized plan. They've actually, the county is planning to make a trail system across the entire county north to south, and they've actually located most of it, the planning process, in this power line easement as their location of where they'd like to see that developed. And so we're staying consistent with that. Timing of the frontage improvements was another question brought up, and that would be with each phase. So as each phase is developed, they would do their associated frontage improvements, and there wouldn't be any occupancy of any homes for that phase until they meet all the requirements of the code for traffic and stormwater planning, all of those things. Each phase has to stand independently if it's done in a phasing method. There's some discussion about schools, and early on, we've had discussions with the school district before actually even starting this project. They do their own comprehensive planning process for all of these lots, knowing all the density in Kitsap County that could be developed, and they have their own planning process to account for that. However, several members at the school district have asked us what projects are working on so they can kind of have an idea of timing, and they are planning ahead even further on certain improvements that they plan to do. And furthermore, we'll be paying impact fees well in excess of, I believe, $1.3 million, which will contribute towards additional road improvements that are not being done by us, school capacity, and parks. And so all of those get paid as well, again, to contribute towards that planning process, which has already been done. There's some questions about a homeowners association, and yes, this will require a homeowners association, and they will have to maintain and take care of all the different improvements that are on site that are not publicly dedicated. And so anything that's publicly dedicated will be maintained by Kitsap County, but the majority of the improvements on site will be maintained by the homeowners association. With that, I didn't really have anything else specifically, but I have Holly Heverin with Core Engineering. She's a civil engineer, and she'd like to speak a little bit to stormwater.
Okay. If you could state your name for the record.
Holly Heverin.
And you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. And could you spell your last name?
Yep. H-E-A-V as in Victor, R-I-N.
Thank you.
So there was a number of stormwater concerns that were brought up, and I do want to reiterate and get all the neighbors to understand that we don't take this lightly. Stormwater is a concern in every situation. It's all evaluated per the strict requirements of the Department of Ecology stormwater manuals, as well as Kitsap County's stormwater manual and Title 16, I believe. So all of the stormwater facilities that are on site are required to meet their natural drainage discourse as provided in Volume 1, Section 4.2.4. Flow control is required on site with on-site stormwater management per Volume 1, 4.2.5. And flow control is also required per 4.2.7. Flow control meaning specifically that the existing forested condition, those flow rates that are currently established are what will be matched in the developed condition. So we do understand there will be an increase in impervious surface, but the point of the flow control management facilities is to maintain that, hold it on site, and slowly release it at that same rate so that there are no impacts downstream to any neighbors, ravines, or any of the drainage courses. There were some concerns about infiltration. The infiltration is always evaluated as a best management practice for the site. This site does not lend itself to infiltration because of the soils. The till soils are very hard. They extend about 25 to 50 feet down. So water cannot infiltrate in that. If we attempted infiltration, what would likely happen is the water would pond up kind of in the top layer of soil and end up what's called interflow, where it would flow through the top layers of soil and probably come out a hillside somewhere, which would be damaging to downstream neighbors. So we're not proposing that. That's another reason for the liners in the pond. It's the same practice, same. That's really it for me, unless there's something else that you want me to cover.
I think that's great. One other thing I'd like to mention, Levi Holmes, for the record. Mm-hmm. I know that there's been significant concern from the Windsong neighborhood and about stormwater getting worse fairly recently. And I believe, looking at aerial imagery, it looks like somewhere in around 2015 is when the underlying property owner logged the property. And one thing just to keep in mind is that under the logging permits, there's no stormwater requirements, no detention or quality control or anything like that, especially if they stay under a clear cut permit, if they're not doing a clear cut. And I believe this was a thinning. And anyway, effectively what that turns into is that stormwater will increase and it's going to sheet flow. And Windsong is unfortunately downhill of this. And so I would be fairly certain that they've probably experienced significant increase to their problems after 2015 when that was done. And the benefit of this property being developed is that it will rectify any of those stormwater issues, and all of it will be detained and treated and released at a rate as if it was 100% forested and had not been logged. And so that should have significant improvement for them as far as their current concerns. With that, I think that's all of the testimony that we have. We again have all of our experts here to answer any questions, either from county staff or from you, Ms. Hearing Examiner. So we are available for that.
Yeah, no, those were the, you all have hit the key issues that I noted in comment to address. So thank you for that. I do not have any additional questions, but we can turn this over back, I think, back to the planning department. And I don't know if Ms. Santos or if you or Mr. Heacock had anything that either of you wanted to add at this point.
Yeah, I can add just a few brief comments of what I took note of, and I can allow Steve some time if he would like to. But so just kind of briefly, I did notice one comment from Mr. Gross about his request to lower the allowed impervious surface, and just wanted to mention that KCC 17.420052 does set the standards for maximum impervious surface requirements, and they're not applicable in this zone. So we don't really have the authority to do that. Also, the same section sets the standards for density requirements, as we discussed, the project is within that. And then secondly, Ms. Gross did make it have a little bit of a discussion about ecology not agreeing with the no buffer requirement. And so the county does understand that ecology may not necessarily agree with that standard, but our scope of review is to ensure that the project meets Kitsap County's approved ordinances, and it does. And that specific code section is KCC 19.200.210C, which identifies the criteria that wetlands have to meet to be considered for no buffers. And staff did find that they met those standards. And then I heard a few calls for frontage improvements to extend farther than what is required or what is proposed. And just the public may or may not be aware, it is typical to require it along frontage of the specific subject sites. And at the time of development of adjacent properties, the adjacent properties would be responsible for their own frontage improvements. There's also a discussion about HOAs and what should be discussed in the HOA requirements. Just want to point everyone to KCC 16.04.080 section E, which does discuss HOA requirements and CC&R requirements. It discusses what the county minimum standards for what needs to be included in that. But things such as whether or not boats or RVs are allowed in the development are not specifically called out and wouldn't necessarily be a minimum requirement, but the developer will be responsible for whatever they want to include in their CC&Rs. And there was a little bit of discussion about the school buses and the bus stops. So the applicant did work with Kitsap Transit, to coordinate during the review what their needs were. And the decision to require two bus stops was in coordination with Kitsap Transit. That was determined what their need is. The specific locations are not yet determined, but the applicant will be required to coordinate further with them to identify the specific locations. Let me see if I have any other notes. The county does agree with what Mr. Holmes discussed about school impacts. And just an additional note, the school district is notified as part of this proposal, and they are part, we do take their comments and consider them. And we have not heard anything that I know of that the school district is in opposition to the proposal. And I think that was it for my notes, unless Steve had anything to add.
Mr. Heacock, was there anything that you wanted to add?
I could add a couple of things. One is kind of related to the character of the surrounding neighborhoods, and in relation to you know, people's concerns about density and that type of thing. And those developments that are surrounding were really kind of rural subdivisions that were allowed prior to growth management. So those particular properties are all on individual septic. There is more of a rural kind of flavor to them, definitely. The lots are much larger because the septic drain field for each individual home is, you know, when you do that kind of development, you need larger properties to be able to do that. So so those were subdivided in the past in much different rules than what we're looking at here. And because we are looking at this development in relation to a more revised and refined urban growth area, that you know, we expect this development density, and it does seem to be kind of in the midpoint of that particular density. The biggest concern we had really in relation to the project is really about traffic. And because the developer came forth to us and posited, hey, we will pay our proportionate share to a traffic signalization at that intersection of El Dorado and Newberry Hill, that, you know, that type of review really was incorporated early, very early in the project. And so therefore it didn't trigger on the other concerns. Why wasn't there an environmental impact statement? Well, because the developer came to us and said, hey, we are going to be paying our fair share relating to these traffic changes and traffic elements, that that it didn't rise to the level of requiring an environmental impact statement. So I think several people talked about that, excuse me, and also really about the size of adjacent developments and things like that. So I just wanted to discuss that a little bit further for the record. And then last, again, the criteria for the small isolated wetlands was redone in our latest critical area ordinance update that occurred in 2016. And we worked closely with Department of Ecology, State Fish and Wildlife, the tribes as well, all of the other environmental, you know, groups and things like that. And it was determined that these small isolated wetlands that had a very low habitat function would qualify as not requiring buffers. But there's a very specific criteria, there's four criteria that must be met for that too, inclusive of the wetland not having an outlet. And so what I mean is that they're not connected to a stream or some kind of feature like that. And so so it did meet all the qualifications of non-buffering. And Mr. Molstead's comment, you know, that you know, they didn't necessarily agree with that. Well, it's part of what we kind of deal with in a regulatory framework, and it's, you know, noted. But we'll look at that again. Again, with growth management, we're required to update our critical area ordinance, our shoreline master program, and other environmental related products on a very regular basis. And Mr. Holmes had noted as well, the comprehensive plan updates are going to begin in 2023 for Kitsap. And so again, just I would encourage community members in the surrounding area to just stay abreast of what kinds of things are going on in their neighborhood and what zoning changes could occur. Again, all of the surrounding neighborhoods are now all in a urban growth area, and they're all now zoned way differently than they were previously. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Heacock, for that additional information and including on the planning background. That's helpful. All right, so I think at this point, we've heard from the public applicant and planning department. I do not have any additional questions for any of the parties. It is a fairly voluminous record at this point. And I will take a close look at all of the public comments which have been received, including the videos which were submitted. And I will read through Mr. Gross's comments, as he was unable to read through it entirely in testimony. But of course, I'll look at all the comments. And I will do a site visit. There was a request in one of the comments that I do that. So I will do a site visit. Probably, I don't enter the site when I do that. I just drive around the site. And it's not evidence, but it provides some context for reviewing the evidence. And I'll probably do it maybe during, I think early morning was when it was suggested. So that's probably when I will do that. This project has been thoroughly reviewed. There's a considerable amount of technical analysis on this, and certainly more outreach was done than would be required. And of course it is a large and complex project, but it's unusual to see kind of, I think we had three state agencies out at the site to look at the critical areas issues, WFW, Ecology, and DNR. So that always ends up with, I think, or usually ends up with better mitigation if everything can be sorted in terms of the approach on that. And my role, of course, is to confirm compliance with the plat regulations that I mentioned, Title 16, and then the development regulations at 17, 19 are the critical areas. So I have a fair amount to look at. The record, as I noted at the beginning of the proceeding, that will be open for another week. And part of that's under the emergency rule because this was a remote hearing. I think everybody who commented was able to do so today. But if there was any difficulty, we do have that additional opportunity for comments. So comments can be submitted through next week, Thursday, June 17, close of business, which is 5 p.m. Those all go to the clerk, Ms. Walston, and then she'll forward those on to me. If there are any comments that come in, which the applicant feels have not, or the department feels have not been addressed, they're new somehow, or there's a need to respond to them, I don't do it at the, today, but if a request is made to respond to anything additionally, I typically will grant that type of request. So I think, and then of course, my decision is out within 10 business days of the close of the record next week. So I think that covers the procedural issues. Are there any questions on procedure from any of the parties?
We do have one hand up that is someone that hasn't spoken before. I don't know if you want to see if there's room for one more.
If it's a procedural question, that's fine. Is that from?
It's someone in the as an attendee. So like I said, I don't know if it's a public comment. Someone hasn't spoken yet. So it's an M. Rogers. You should be able to unmute at this point.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Did you have a question, Ms. Rogers?
It is not a procedural. I was home computer earlier and I had to completely go out and go back in on my phone to...
Ms. Rogers, it is a little out of order, but given this kind of unique time we're in, I am going to go ahead and kind of let you provide
thank you
comment. So why don't I go ahead and just swear you in? If you could state your name for the record.
Melissa Rogers.
And you swear affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
I do.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Okay, so we recently purchased a sizable amount of property on the west side of this project. And we're in 100% agreement with all the concerns that are being raised. A couple key things that we're hearing in the responses is eventually and didn't rise to the level. And in, we, as far as the several comments or several concerns that are in regard to the traffic and the safety of the pedestrians is, you know, we too would like an answer on, you know, eventually sidewalks in that area, or if it's deemed needed, or would that be prior to ensure. Another main concern we have with the sizable amount of property that we purchased on the west side is we will have horses, we will have children, and it was brought up that they didn't feel there would be an impact with wildlife because it's done in phases, and all that is saying that when phase one is done, they'll be condensed to an even smaller area, phase two, an even smaller, phase three. And we see our area being, you know, 75 acres, that's where they're going to be. And I just, it, I don't know. It's a huge concern for us. We are in 100% agreement that, you know, development does happen and everybody has the right to have a nice area, but we also are concerned as how the number was determined. You know, was it just a middle road in what the minimum and maximum, or, you know, how was that determined? Because I think everybody's comments really support further research and further answers on that to reduce the amount of homes. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Rogers. I'm glad we were able to finally identify you there.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, that was a little bit unusual kind of proceeding wise. I just want to give forward the opportunity to the department of the applicant, if there's anything final that they wanted to note, given that I opened the public comment back up. And I do the density question, I know, which Ms. Rogers mentioned, I know that has been addressed. And the, you know, the question of critical areas and traffic has also been addressed. But if there's anything that the department or applicant wanted to add at this point, that's fine.
Sure, yeah, Levi Holmes again. One thing just to mention, Ms. Rogers' property borders the west side of our property, which is also where the stream runs. So there's gonna be a minimum of 100-foot buffer between any development on our side, you know, on our property and hers, as well as there's the urban growth boundary between ours and her property as well. So there will be, you know, some sort of buffer there, you know, that will help, hopefully help us sound in some of the issues you may have concerns of being adjacent to the property. But other than that, I don't have any other comments and just want to say that we appreciate staff's time and the hearing examiner, and we would ask that this be approved as proposed by the staff report. And we're in agreement with all the conditions of approval.
Oh yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I had forgotten to ask about the proposed conditions in the staff report, but it sounds like, Mr. Holmes, there's no concerns with, and there are a fair number of conditions on this, 82 actually. So, okay, thank you for that confirmation. And then anything further from the planning department?
I guess I'll just add one last note specific to the last comment that we received. Regards to wildlife, just to kind of point to KCC 19.300.310, which our code specifies the very specific types of habitats that are protected under our code. And this is in coordination with federal and state agencies for specific endangered and threatened types of species. And not all wildlife does fall under those protections. And there was an environmental report that discussed if any of those species were found. And I believe it was determined that there was no habitat for any of the listed species.
Yeah, I can reiterate a little bit. One of the applicants,
and then just for the record, that's Mr. Heacock.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry. So one of the questions that had been posited by someone in the community, and I don't recall, but there was a record of a Western pond turtle found, I believe, down on Frontier, but I can't recall exactly where that was. But the applicant had asked their wetland consultant, the biologist for the project, to take a look at that as well. And it was determined that there wasn't any habitat. The Western pond turtle really needs large open water type of wetlands to habitate. And so they did a survey and did re-examine. And that's about the same time some of these additional wetlands were also found too. But it was determined that that Western pond turtle, there was no available habitat for them anywhere near the project area. So, but they did do a revised wetland study and habitat assessment to take a look at that kind of feature. And, you know, again, noting that the wetlands will be fenced, but that fencing will be able to convey all wildlife. And again, these small isolated wetlands are pretty much dominant by Douglas spirea, which is a very dense woody type of shrub that the Western pond turtle would actually have a very difficult time. Well, it couldn't live there because it's not the right type of environment for it. It needs the open water, large open water wetlands. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Heacock. Okay, so I think at this point, we have heard all the material that we need to hear today. As I mentioned earlier, records open for a week, and I'll review any additional comments which come in during that time period. And then we'll issue my decision within 10 business days of that. And I'd previously asked the procedural questions. I think we've covered everything. So Ms. Walston, is there anything else that I need to address this morning before we adjourn?
The only thing I wanted to clarify is during the presentation, Ms. Santos referenced, there was one additional public comment that came in kind of late yesterday. And then with the applicant presentation, that brings the record. I assigned tentatively the exhibit numbers for that other public comment to 87, applicant presentation 88, and the sign-in sheet will be 89. Okay. So that's where the record stands right now. But that's all I have. Otherwise, you've covered everything.
Okay, yeah, and all those exhibits are admitted, and I know we'll update the exhibit list as if we have additional comments that come in. So,
all right.
Thank you for that. I appreciate everyone's participation today. I was a little worried. I didn't know how lengthy comments would be and so forth, but it worked pretty well, I think, with using the chat function to identify folks. I think we were able to hear from everyone who wanted to comment today. And I appreciate the approach which everyone took, which was very respectful. So thank you all for your participation. I have a great deal to review. We are adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone.